Big thanks to all of you KBOO members for your support for community radio. If you missed our recent membership drive, you can still become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for an interview with anti-war activist Ray McGovern on his arrest at a General David Petraeus speaking event in New York City. Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Robert.
Good night, Matthew.
Good night.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
First of all, can you please tell the story of what happened to you on Thursday in New York City?
Well, yes, sure. I was up in New York, my hometown, where I spent my first 22 years before going into the service. And I was teaching a course at Manhattan College up in Riverdale in the Bronx, and also at Fordham, my alma mater, talking about justice, talking about peace, talking about the fact that peace is nothing more than simply the experience of justice, and that sometimes we have to put our bodies into it if we're going to change things. Little did I know that I was going to be offered the opportunity to put my body into it just later that evening. I had bought a ticket to hear General David Petraeus speak at the 92nd Street Y, which a lot of people in New York consider a really top-flight place to hear important people. So Petraeus and one of his minions, a fellow named Nagel, and Max Boot, supreme neocon, were going to be holding forth, no doubt, about their successes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Don't laugh, please. And I thought, hey, you know, it might be kind of good to get a ticket to see that. And since I'm in town anyway, I'd do that. And maybe I'd even participate in the question and answer period, as I had the luck to do with Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld way back in May of 2006, which ended up in a wonderful opportunity to have a four-minute debate with him. So whether or not that would happen, at least maybe I get a question in, and he wouldn't turn out to be Saint David Petraeus as he has been portrayed, or chief strategist and that kind of thing. So, long story short, I thought, Scott, I was clever enough not to order the ticket through my own email system. So I asked a friend up there, can you get me a ticket? And she said, sure. So she got me a ticket. I shelled out the $50. And as I got to the ticket taker, all of a sudden I hear this booming voice, Ray, you're not welcome here. You're not going to get in. You're going to turn around and go away. We're not letting you in. Look at this. And this rather portly bouncer who turns out to be the head of security for the 92nd Street Y says, I told you not to come back here. I look at him. I said, what do you mean? You disrupted the proceedings last time. I said, wait a second. What he was referring to was when Donald Rumsfeld, my favorite debate partner, showed up at the 92nd Street Y about 3 years ago when I was also, by chance actually, in town, and I went to see what he and a bunch of neocons were going to say. And all I did on that occasion was stand up on the far right of the auditorium in the first row where no one could actually notice me. But security noticed me and the NYPD noticed me, and I got 30 seconds worth of standing up there silently before they rather violently threw me out of the premise. And I remember a guy saying, don't come back. Well, you know, I don't know about don't come back. When you buy a ticket, you should be able to get in. So on the strength of the fact that Petraeus was coming, I decided I'd like to go, and when I remonstrated and said, look, you know, I have this ticket, they said, well, no, we have the right to refuse you to come in. I said, well, no, that doesn't sound right. I have this constitution here, which I always carry around with me. The First Amendment says, you know, freedom of speech and assembly, and, you know, that doesn't square well. before I knew it, the New York City cops were all over me. And what really hurt, literally, was that I had earlier in the week fallen down and hurt my left shoulder rather badly, as well as my left eyebrow, where I have 8 stitches still in there. And the rotator cuff had been really, really severely damaged. And what they were trying to do is get my arms together behind my back the way they usually do into one set of handcuffs. Well, the pain was excruciating. And finally, they kind of gave up, and they strung a couple of pairs of handcuffs together so that my left wrist, which was not physically capable of coming together with my right wrist with one pair of handcuffs. Anyhow, long story short, they immobilized me, as the procedure is called for, put me into the back of a police car, took me off to the 19th precinct, where I was gone through the procedures of the 18 hand little fingerprints and photos. And then I insisted on going to New York University Cornell. I just insisted on seeing a doctor because I was afraid this time the thing had been broken, my left shoulder. So they x-rayed me, said, no fracture, just a heck of a lot of pain. Here, take this ibuprofen, which I did. Being subjected to those conditions in the very bottom of this mammoth building and seeing how people are forced to, innocent people really, are forced to endure suffering above and beyond the call of any civilized society. All I could remember was what Dostoevsky has famously said, and that is, if you want to see the level of sophistication or humaneness of a society, go look at the prisons. Well, I got a good look that night. Then I was arraigned about 10:30, and they accused me of, resisting arrest because of the pain that I had and the pain they had in putting the cuffs on me, and with something like criminal trespass. I don't know how that figures. Here I was with a ticket. So long story short, a young, wonderful pro bono lawyer from my Catholic worker community who helps people out like me, defended me adroitly, pointed out to the judge that, the fact that they had to put multiple sets of handcuffs on the guy shows something, doesn't it? And I have to go to court on early December for phase two. But there are lots of facets of this incredible adventure, not least of which is my experience actually in the jail, which I think we can save for another time, because these kinds of, well, all I'll just say now, right now, is that the personal experience with innocent suffering is the sine qua non catalyst for understanding what injustice is. And very seldom do we people of great privilege, have a chance to be with people who are enduring this kind of thing. And, the white cops kept saying, well, you don't belong here, you don't belong here. And I said, I do belong here. These are my brothers. I do belong here. And so, again, that's for another session, but it was really very depressing how people are treated in our prison system.
Getting back to this specific event here, Ray, it's curious to me. I guess it's understandable to me that they know who you are. I mean, you're a pretty Googleable guy, and they threw you out before, so they must have done a little bit of research to figure out what was the big deal with you and whatever. But then what I read at Fire Dog Lake was that they greeted everybody by their first name. A bunch of people who, maybe they're political activists, but still it's rather strange when they call you Ray, and then she's Susie, and he's Bob, and they're acting like everybody's old friends here. This is NYPD... sophisticated intelligence launched against a small group of Code Pink types. What's going on here?
Well, it's the 92nd Street Y plus the NYPD plus, I believe, the federal agencies with whom the NYPD has been in bed literally at least since 9/11. That is a matter of record. It was weird. "Hey, Ray, you're not welcome here, Ray." You know, I said, "Who are you?" And then I recognized that, you know, I looked at, like the guy. He says, "Yeah, you're not welcome here." And I said, "Look, you know, this is out of order. I bought a ticket." "Oh, the ticket didn't matter." And then Mike, I said, "Hey, Mike, you can't come in here either." So somehow they knew that we were coming, even though we were careful, Scott, to not to buy. I didn't buy the ticket myself. I asked a friend in New York to buy it for me. So
I wonder if it was facial recognition working in real time. You know, somebody in the earbud has, you know, his files being pulled up.
I've consulted the experts on this, Scott, and it's very simple. You know, for those who still worry or still think that they can't really intercept emails, or that they only collect metadata, or that they can't really handle all these telephone calls, millions every day, well, I guess I'm forced to conclude, sure they can. Sure they can.
Yep.
And, you know, when the people say, "Well, you know, I don't have anything to worry about. I have a clean life. I have nothing to hide." Well, the first thing I think about, Scott, is it was that old Stasi guy, the old East German Security Services guy, who, after Edward Snowden unburdened himself and told us what's going on with NSA intercept activity, he was asked, "What about how do you address this question when people say we have nothing to hide? Do we have something to hide? Well, I guess if it's a crime to want to go in and ask David Petraeus a decent question."
Yeah, you did have something to hide. Yeah, your secret covert mission to try to get the bravest man in the world to have to face up to answering a question about his failure, his loss of two wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would have been embarrassing, and, you know, the poor guy. But, you know, the height of the irony here is that poor little David Petraeus was subjected to the same kind of intrusion into his emails, which did him in.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's funny.
You know?
Which, of course, I forget if you had reported this, but I know Giraldi was saying, Phil Giraldi, another former CIA officer, was saying that, I think he wrote this in the American Conservative magazine, that was really kind of a coup d'etat against Petraeus by the CIA, that they had their buddies in the FBI get rid of this guy for them because they couldn't stand
actually,
him anymore.
It was, it was more the FBI and NSA, because Petraeus, of course, was part of the CIA at the time, the director.
Like the lower guys said, "Hey, you know, went to their buddies in the other agencies and said,
from the top.
Off with
now,
the king's
let,
head."
Let me tell you how I reconstruct it.
Okay.
Petraeus was, you know about his affair with Paula Broadwell. Petraeus was getting too big for his britches. Now, and I don't mean, you know, I don't mean especially with respect to Broadwell. I mean metaphorically. He was really kind of sounding off in a way that Obama didn't much care for. Obama had already been kind of mousetrapped into doing this stupid surge number two, the one into Afghanistan, which turned out to come a cropper. And Petraeus was, you know, clearly had presidential aspirations and could not be depended on to do an honest job, even in the CIA. So what happens? The president calls, or the White House calls General Alexander now, who's head of the NSA, and Robert Mueller. Now, why do I say Robert Mueller? Well, because he was the head of the FBI. And Mueller let the cat out of the bag, because 3 years ago, in testimony to Congress, Mueller talked about setting up the NSA database, which could be queried to catch just about anyone. I know contracting officers that have worked for the U.S. government, and, you know, they've taken these courses. And what's really drummed into them, at least when I was around, is that you have to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest. The appearance, okay? The appearance, much less the reality. Well, if this isn't, you know, face down a conflict of interest where Alexander, head of NSA, Mueller, the head of the FBI, now have this really well-heeled computer security company working for the banks for payback, because the banks didn't like Elliot Spitzer doing what he was doing. Elliot is out of the equation now, but Caden and Bob Mueller are making lots of money. You know, I have to ask myself, what do you do with your second million or your third million? You know, do they have no shame? And this is not the appearance of a conflict of interest. Trace it back, for God's sake. My middle school granddaughter can figure it out. This is corruption. This is corruption by highly touted, well-respected people that congressional people call all kinds of accolade-type names.
All right, y'all, that is the heroic Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst turned peacenik. He will come and give a speech to your group. He writes at consortiumnews.com. And he is safe and sound out of jail now. So rest assured. That's it for Anti-War Radio. Thanks very much, everybody, for listening. I'm Scott Horton, and you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
A sweet harmony will set us free and leave our
Artichoke Music, Satori Men's Chorus, and Mark Bosnian will present Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio, Thursday, November 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. This concert celebrates Portland's love for local music and local community radio. Tickets are available in advance from Brown Paper Tickets or at the door. All proceeds benefit KBOO.